Hello and welcome back. Thank you so much for joining me today. My name is Leah, and this is another creepy story. Just pineapple, please. I recently moved to Powell River to attend their culinary arts program. I've always loved cooking and figured that chefs don't sleep much, which is a win-win for my situation. I even found an apartment to rent for 6 months while attending, and the manager helped me get a part-time job at a local pizza shop. They knew the owner, apparently. It wasn't much, but I was lucky enough to get weekend shifts. It fit my schedule, and tips were always really good on Friday and Saturday nights. Ever since moving here, though, my sleep patterns have gotten worse. And this is saying a lot, because they were horrible to begin with. In fact, I'm doing everything I can to avoid sleeping for long stretches. I only let myself sleep for 30 minutes at a time. I'm not ashamed to admit that the dream scares me, because it does. But it's the physical pain preceding it that has me avoiding full sleep cycles. You see, I have suffered from one specific nightmare for as long as I can remember. I even remember arguing with my kindergarten teacher about it, and why I didn't want to take naps with other kids at the school. "I'm too scared of the nightmare," I would tell her. I tried to explain how the mean lady would leave me in the barn, where it was wet and cold. How she would close the door and everything would go eerily silent and dark. But I couldn't get out. And then I would wake up in the real world with this burning pain deep in my stomach. My kindergarten teacher told me that I needed sleep and promised me that the dream catchers we had made in art class would protect me from bad nightmares like that. Even scary women who left children in cold barns couldn't penetrate them. I eventually took her word and laid down with the rest of my class. I gazed up at the dream catcher I'd made, covered in red and blue feathers and beads. And I hoped that she was right. Eventually, I fell asleep to her voice, reading a book about barn animals or something like that. But when I woke up from the nap and started screaming in pain and clutching my stomach, just like I told her I would, she called an ambulance. I remember trying to explain to the paramedics that it was the scary lady in my dream, that she would hurt my stomach in the real world. But then, after being awake for a minute or two, the pain would go away. They asked me question after question. They showed me pictures of different faces to help me explain myself. They ran tests and they even did x-rays. My parents tried to explain to them that I had been talking about the nightmare for as long as I could articulate myself, but I'd been a bad sleeper even as an infant. And there wasn't anything physically wrong with me. No doctor could figure out where this blistering pain came from upon waking. That was years ago. I'm an adult now, and the nightmare hasn't changed at all. It still haunts me every single night. The only difference is my understanding of it. It took me years to realize. I didn't understand it as a kid, but in the dream, I'm being buried alive. And even though it's the same scenario every night, it never gets any easier. the fear, the helplessness, the realness of it, it never dissipates. It's a place that I've never been, but I know it's a barn. Beams of light shoot in from stall windows, and I can see rafters above me that are stuffed with hay. There's a black and white cat up there, and it's always hunting something. A mouse or a bird, I'm not sure. Whatever it's doing, though, it's completely indifferent to the fear that I'm experiencing. I always find myself wishing that it was a dog. Maybe then it would come down and comfort me. I'm laying on my back in the dirt, and I can feel how cold the soil is. And as much as I hate to admit it, I compare it to an ice bath because it's relieving this burning sensation on my skin. The cat pounces on something, I hear a thud, and then, like clockwork, I turn my head to the left, and I see the woman in the white, flowing dress, and she's exiting the barn. Her long black hair gets caught on the handle of the door as this big gust of wind comes through, and as she turns to free it, she looks at me. I know she sees me, but she closes the door and walks away. I hate her face. Like the cat, she's detached from me. She doesn't care that I'm lying there in the ground. She's the one that put me there. I know it. I try to move, but the weight from the shallow grave is too much. It feels like quicksand that's pulling me further into the ground. And then I feel like I'm falling. I wake up, only half aware of where I am, and I feel myself sinking into my bed. The shivering quickly turns into sweating as the stomach pain sets in. It still only lasts about a minute. That hasn't changed, but I've yet to meet a doctor who can tell me what it is. I've been through sleep therapy and overnight studies in hospitals. I've done blood tests, CAT scans, name the test, and I've had it done. The last doctor suggested that it was cortisol, that the stress from the nightmare spiked my hormones, causing inflammation in my body. I don't know. I just wish that it would stop. Luckily, with my school schedule and work, there wasn't much time for sleep. I hadn't met the owners of the pizza shop yet, but their daughter and manager, Amy, had hired me a week before the events. It happened on Friday. Amy and I were cleaning up for the night when the phone rang. I hoped that it wasn't an order, because I had just finished cleaning up the prep area. But of course, it was. 10 minutes before closing. "I'd like 2 small pineapple pizzas," a deep voice said. I think that she just woken up as she had that undisguisable, dropped voice box sound. "We have a special this week. 3 toppings, no extra charge." "2 small pineapple pizzas," she repeated. "Okay, if you order 1 large pineapple instead of 2 smalls, you'll save $7, I said, just trying to be friendly. Again, "2 small pineapple pizzas." She didn't yell, but she did repeat the order with more force. I wrote her address down and fired up the oven again. Some people are just really specific about their pies, I guess. "Hey Adam, was that 3130 Malcolm Drive?" Amy asked, noticing that I had only taken the pineapple out of the fridge. "Yeah, why?" "No reason. You had to deliver there eventually, I guess. But that's Rose Thatcher. She's ordered from us once a week ever since I've been a kid. She's never done anything, but she is kind of weird. That's the nicest way to put it. Amy flipped the close sign on the door, and I headed out for the delivery. I was exhausted from my lack of sleep and school schedule, but luckily the house was only about 5 minutes away, and the night was almost over. I was really looking forward to my 30-minute nap after. I've never liked driving to new places, especially at nighttime. I really hated not being able to see addresses when they were covered by trees or bushes, and I don't really know where this anxiety came from. But Amy said that it was in a nice residential area at the end of a cul-de-sac, and I couldn't miss the house. And when I finally pulled up, I saw what she meant. Every property on the street was maintained and manicured, but hers was completely overgrown. It looked abandoned, actually. A rusting 1970 plum purple Dodge Challenger sat in her driveway. It was the first thing that I noticed. It was surrounded, or it looked like it was submerged in this lake of garbage. I couldn't pinpoint the anger that I felt for letting this beautiful car fall into such a neglected state. It wasn't like it was my car, but something about it really bothered me. There were trash bags everywhere, most of them ripped open by animals, and her entire driveway was just shrouded with garbage. I had to step into the debris just to get to her stairs. It was still light out, but her property was so shaded by old trees that no sunlight could really get in, and there was moss growing on the windows at her front door. The front porch was no better. It was covered with clothing, dishes, old newspapers, and bins. It looked like an episode of Hoarders. As I went up the stairs, I could see her, Rose Thatcher. She was to the right of the frosted pane of glass, and she was just standing there, hiding and waiting for me to knock. Why do people have to be so awkward? I thought to myself. I really wish the store would just get onto one of the delivery apps so people could pay ahead of time and I could just leave the pizza without talking to them. But I had to get the money. I knocked, and she waited an obligatory few seconds to make it seem like she hadn't been standing there the whole time. Then she opened the door, but only a crack. This long, wiry gray hair that hadn't been brushed in years stuck out like electricity, and she just peeked out at me. I always pulled my hats pretty far down to help hide the black circles under my eyes, but she could clearly see that I was the delivery driver because of the boxes that I was holding. She slammed the door and undid what sounded like 3 or 4 chain locks, and then finally opened. She was wearing a dirty nightgown, I think. It had probably been white at one point, but was now stained to this dark gray color. And she stood with her feet too far apart in completely threadbare slippers. She looked like a hospital patient who hadn't bathed in years. I felt kind of bad for thinking that, but that's what I saw. I glanced behind her into her hallway, and I could see this mountain of pizza boxes. It must have been the same height as me, and I'm 6'1". Clearly, this woman needed help, but I just wanted to get the money and leave. I was really uncomfortable and felt like I needed to lighten the mood. So I made a joke about her order, I said, I've got two controversial pizzas here. I really can't express how much I hate pineapple on pizza. The fruit itself is fine on its own, but the thought of eating it on pizza actually angers me. And I know that a lot of people agree. But she didn't get my joke. She didn't laugh. She didn't smile. I held the boxes towards her and her long yellowed fingers touched my hand as she reached out to grab them. In that instant, I almost felt like I was electrocuted. I dropped her pizzas as the stomach pain that I only felt in the morning after the nightmare came on suddenly and more severely than ever before. It was so unexpected and so intense that I fell backwards, landing on a black garbage bag of old pop cans. The loud crunching of soft metal echoed throughout her front yard. If I had to explain the pain, it's like a pair of hands. Hands that are maybe wearing barbed wire gloves. And they grab onto your stomach and intestines and they just start twisting. Twisting until the organs look like a strand of DNA. But then, as fast as it comes on, it disappears. But I had never experienced the pain at this time of day before. As I was bent over, waiting for the stinging to end, I also had to remove my hat. It suddenly felt two sizes too small, and my temples were actually pulsing underneath it. When I swiveled back around, Rose Thatcher was still standing in her doorway. She was just staring at me with these dead eyes. There was zero sympathy or concern for this young guy in pain. She said nothing. But then, just like in the morning, the pain vanished. I sat there in this pile of garbage, confused, and I watched as Rose Thatcher kicked the garbage away from the doorway. She bent down and scooped up the jumbled pizza slices that had landed on her dirty porch. She scooped them all into a pile with her hands, then she dumped the mess of food back into the boxes. She went inside and she locked the door without paying. I mean, I was the one that dropped the pizzas, so I guess I wasn't expecting her to pay. I didn't think Amy would mind. She did also warn me that Rose was pretty weird, so I thought she would understand. But I also didn't want the money coming out of my paycheck. So I was relieved when I heard that little clink of metal hinges opening below me, and I saw her old, bony hand that was covered in liver spots. She was holding a $20 bill through the mail slot. As I reached down to take it, she grabbed my wrist and her uncut, jagged nails dug deep into my skin. She started screaming through the mail slot. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. Over and over and over again. I kept trying to pull away, and she kept screaming these three words over and over again. As I was trying to pull my arm away, I could feel and smell her disgusting breath coming through the little gap. She had long, sharp, yellow teeth, almost like a wild animal. As she was grabbing onto me, the pain in my stomach came back at the same time, but now it was sharper than it had ever been. And again, it only happened when she made contact with me. Once I broke away, the pain subsided. The strange headache came and went within only a few seconds, and then, as usual, I was fine again. I left the money and returned to the store empty-handed. I explained to Amy what had happened, and she said that she had never been comfortable delivering anything to that woman's house. She said that Rose had never gotten physical with her, but she wasn't surprised that something like this had finally happened. It was almost like she wasn't surprised that she had finally snapped. She said that she'd always gotten a bad feeling from that woman, like she was hiding some sort of dark secret or waiting to let something out. Maybe some sort of a monster. Amy called her mom and said that she was banning food orders and any deliveries to Rose Thatcher's house. And despite being a repeat customer for decades, her mom agreed. She wasn't going to put a customer before her employee's safety. So, when Rose called again the next night and placed the exact same order, Amy took the phone from me and told her that Riverside Pizza would no longer be serving her due to her bad behavior. I could hear Rose screaming some pretty colorful words through the receiver, but Amy was firm and eventually hung up. I felt pretty weird about the whole thing, like I had cost them a longtime customer, but Amy told me not to worry about it. She was curious about one thing, though. She asked me if I had given Rose a fake name during the delivery last night. I said no, I didn't give her my name at all. "That's weird," she said. She demanded that Derek deliver her pizza again. Nobody named Derek worked at the shop, and I was the only male driver there, so I had no idea why she assumed my name was Derek. It was too weird and almost too random to really give any more thought to it. And it was Saturday. We didn't have any more time to put thought into it. I ran 10 deliveries before 6 p.m. and the night was going good, and the tips were higher than usual. When I got back to the shop, Amy already had 5 more orders ready to go for delivery. She smirked at me with her cute grin as I packed the pizzas into bags. I was working up the confidence to ask her out, but I really didn't want to make anything awkward. I got the pizzas in the car and started backing out of the spot when another car pulled up behind me. I heard the engine first, but then it hit the brakes with this piercing screech and blocked me in. I recognized it instantly. It was the purple Challenger from Rose's driveway. Amy had seen her pull in and was already on the phone with the police. She assumed that Rose had been so angry about not being served that she was going to make a scene, but both to her and my surprise, Rose approached my car, not the restaurant. I rolled the manual window up as fast as it would go. I did not want to be in close contact with this woman again. She was wearing the same thing as yesterday. The dirty nightgown, the slippers, but she was also holding a camera. One of those old Polaroids. I yelled at her to move her car and get out of here. I mean, I would have said more, but clearly this woman was unstable. She brought the Polaroid up to her eye and snapped a picture of me as I sat in the driver's seat. She waved the picture frantically, hoping that it would develop faster. And then she turned it around and she pressed it hard against my window. I saw my own stunned face sitting in my car and staring at the camera. I don't know what she was expecting me to do. Why was she showing me a picture of myself? And why was she so angry? She started beating on the windows and tried to open every door, but I locked each one. And once again, she started screaming. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. But it was the next thing she said that really gave me the creeps. she said, "I'll finish the job this time." She reached into her nightgown pocket and pulled out what I thought was going to be a weapon, but it was a slice of pineapple pizza. It looked like a triangle cardboard covered in lint, but she took a large bite of it like it had just come out of the oven. Amy was now at the front door of the shop. She was on the phone and yelling at Rose that the cops were on their way. She didn't have a weapon to break my windows, so she just continued banging on them while eating her old pizza and pressing the Polaroid picture up for me to see. Once again, I don't know what she was trying to accomplish. I was on the brink of believing that this was some twisted joke. Maybe a new TV show. I don't know. It was October. The cops, as well as Amy's mom, arrived within 10 minutes. Rose wasn't combative with the police or anything, and was escorted easily to a car. It was only when they closed the door that I got out of mine. Amy ran over and hugged me, asking if I was okay. I was fine, just shaken up. And then she called her mom over to introduce us. "Mom, this is Adam, the new driver that I hired last week." "Hi, I'm Cynthia." But Mrs. Rivers stopped mid-sentence and dropped her hand. "Mom?" Amy asked. "You look like you just saw a ghost." I thought I did," she said, and apologized for not shaking my hand. "I'm so sorry. It's just... You look identical to an old friend of mine." She got really close to me. Much too close. "Even the mark under your eye," she said, "it's identical. It's eerie." I'd had the birthmark forever. It sat just under the right corner of my eye, and it almost looked like an upside-down teardrop. I used to be embarrassed by it, but I didn't really worry about it anymore. Amy asked her mom who I looked like, and her mom explained the similarity was with an old friend of hers, Derek Thatcher, Rose's husband. "You could be his twin," she said. Derek Thatcher had disappeared in 1988. Most people, including Amy's parents, had assumed that he'd left her because of her erratic behavior, and he just didn't have the heart to say goodbye. Nobody ever found out where he had gone, and nobody had heard from him in decades. It's always pretty awkward when people say that you look like somebody close to them, especially if it makes them emotional. And Amy's mom was clearly shaken up. I could tell that I was making her uncomfortable. I wasn't sure what to make of her story, but luckily a police officer came over at that moment and asked me to talk in private. I was glad for the interruption, to be honest. Though, as I walked with him to the opposite side of the parking lot, I could feel Amy's mom continuing to stare. I kept my head down, pretending like I didn't know that she was looking, but she was just staring at me. I know it was kind of selfish, but all I could think about was I hope that she wasn't going to fire me. The officer held up the Polaroid that Rose had taken of me, and he asked me if I could tell him the story behind this picture. I quickly glanced at it, not really wanting to look at it anymore. I'd seen plenty of it while Rose was banging on my car windows. I told him that she took the picture while I was sitting in the car. The officer looked very confused. "No," he said. "It's a picture of you sitting at a dining table, eating what looks like... is that pineapple pizza? I just want to know why Rose has this picture on her. Are you related to her?" I think my jaw actually dropped, the way that people describe it in books. Was this how Amy's mom felt when she saw me? The guy in the picture was smiling at the camera. He looked happy. He had medium length brown hair, a neck that was almost too long for his body, and a teardrop-shaped birthmark under the right eye. It was me. But it wasn't me. I was sitting at a table that I didn't recognize, in a house, a kitchen that I had never been. The guy was smiling, doing the peace sign, with a plate of pizza in front of him. And Cynthia Rivers, Amy's mom, she was in the picture too, and she was hugging the guy from behind. She looked like she must have only been in her 20s. I grabbed the picture from the officer, and I turned it over. On the back, it said, "Derek and Cynthia, 1988. While in custody, Rose admitted to the murder of her husband. In October of 1988, she had begun poisoning him. She went into extreme detail about how she had discovered the affair between him and their friend, Cynthia Rivers. Her and Frank had just opened Riverside Pizza. Rose thought that it was only fitting to put the poison on his favorite food, pineapple pizza. When he died, she buried him in the barn on their property and told everyone that he had left her. They had always had serious problems, so nobody questioned his leaving, except Cynthia. She had always thought that the circumstances were suspicious. When I had made that delivery to Rose, she believed that I was him. That I was Derek. She believed that I had come back to haunt her for what she had done, and that I was trying to poison her in revenge. She even told police that Cynthia was in on it, that she had somehow brought me back to life. When the team searched her house, they found it stuffed with old pizza boxes. Rose Thatcher had been ordering 2 small pineapples once a week since 1988, in some sort of macabre remembrance of what she had done. She had never eaten any of them. They had just been sitting in her house for all of those years. Reporters soon swarmed the house, and this large tent was constructed around the barn in the backyard. It was there where the CSI team found and retrieved the body. He was buried inside in a shallow grave, below the rafters, just like in my nightmare. Derek Thatcher was given a proper burial after the investigation. Cynthia attended so she could give her final goodbyes. I didn't attend the funeral, but I did stop by the gravesite that night, long after everybody else had left. I wasn't in the mood for people to do double takes when they saw me. I don't know why I went. Something about seeing myself in his photo and knowing what happened to him It just made me want to say that I was sorry. And part of me felt connected to him. And I know that sounds crazy, but I can't really explain it. If you see a photo of yourself, it looks identical to you, and you hear that they've been murdered, it's a pretty indescribable feeling. All I do know is that I was shocked when I saw the date of his death on the headstone. October 21st, 1988. My birthday. I later learned from Amy that the Challenger had belonged to Derek. Cynthia bought it in the estate sale and was going to have it restored in his honor. I kept working at Riverside Pizza while attending classes. It's still weird how Cynthia looks at me sometimes. It's like she's replaying memories with me that I just can't remember. I usually work night shifts though, so I don't have to run into her too often. When I do though, she still has that shocked look on her face, like she's seeing a ghost from a past life. I've never been religious, nor have I ever believed in reincarnation or anything like that. But the one thing that I truly do not understand, that no medical anomaly can explain, is that ever since Rose Thatcher was charged with his murder and he was given a proper burial, my nightmares have completely stopped. The stomach pain and the headaches are gone. In fact, after the event, I have never slept better.